Hello, this is Jo Tomlin for Fringe Review at the Edinburgh Festival, and I'm going to be talking to someone from Trick of the Light Theatre. So would you introduce yourself, please?
Absolutely. My name is Paul Waggett. I'm a cast member in the show The Road That Wasn't There, produced by Trick of the Light Theatre this year at the Edinburgh Festival. Which is I don't know how to describe it succinctly, but it's a sort of a dark fairy tale inspired by the works of people like Neil Gaiman or the New Zealand fiction writer Margaret Mahe, about a young girl who finds a pathway to a magical world. And it's, you know, there's a coming of age story there. There's sometimes adults will often find different layers to it than the children. It's sort of a quite a broad show in that sense. It'll appeal to many people on many different levels. Is the great thing about it, really.
So is it a devised story or was it a script before this?
So back in 2012, Ralph McCubbin Howell, who wrote it and is in it, and Hannah Smith, who directed it, were living in Bristol. And they wrote it together. They wrote the story together in Bristol, and then Ralph wrote the play script. So it's been in existence for 5 years now. Its very first production was in the Free Fringe in 2012 up here in Edinburgh. And then it went back to New Zealand and toured for a good couple of years and then sort of hibernated a bit. And I came on board in 2015 and we toured it around New Zealand some more. It's been around Australia and it's coming back now to Edinburgh as a new beast. It's been recently revamped with new design elements. So
there's a lot of music in it, some's recorded, a little bit played live, and some singing, which was quite lovely. And all of you seem to be able to sing quite nicely. So could you talk about the music and how that came about in the show?
Absolutely. So the original production, Ralph wrote all the music himself and recorded it in a bathroom on his guitar, on his iPhone, which was very low tech. But when they got back to New Zealand, there's a composer in Wellington who we've worked with quite a bit by the name of Tane Upjohn-Beatson, and he is a fantastic composer. So he took some of the themes that Ralph had been working with and then wrote this soundtrack for the whole play, which is really lovely for us because there's it feels quite filmic sometimes that you're able to play with the soundtrack under a scene. And it can be challenging as an actor to make sure that you time everything the same so you're always hitting the right beat to the music. But it ultimately, I think anyway, that it makes life easier for us because music is so emotive and people feel a lot through music. So Tane's written this score for the whole piece, and then there's sort of four or five songs, as it were, in the play with lyrics that sort of punctuate the play. And I really enjoy them. You know, it's just so much fun to have a little bit of a song in a story to. To me, it kind of fits the fairy tale aspect of it, and the storytelling vibe comes through really nicely in the songs. And they're just nice and simple. A few little harmonies for us, but you know, none of us are trained singers. But we've all been musical in our time, so yeah, it's great fun.
The set is rather inventive.
Yeah.
Cardboard boxes everywhere, and they become everything. Mm-hmm. Is that something that was devised with the cast, or was that a directorial choice? How did that develop?
So, I guess the key thing is that the idea was that the story is based around Maggie, the protagonist, discovering a paper road, which is a road drawn on a map that was never built. And there's, I think, if I remember this correctly, there are 56,000 kilometres of paper roads in New Zealand that were drawn on maps way back when the first sort of European settlement was happening that never got built. And so this idea of a paper road then fed into the whole production. And so everything is paper. The cardboard boxes are a form of paper. The maps are almost all paper. There's one sneaky calico map in there now. The puppets, so there's two styles of puppeting in the show. The shadow puppets, which are cardboard on an OHP now, and then the rod puppets, who are sort of maybe 2 foot tall little little paper mache guy. So I mean, their skeleton is wood, but you know, what's wood if not the beginnings of paper? So everything in the production is designed to connect back to that idea of the paper road and the story, the fact that you can create with paper and you can draw and you can and write. So yeah, that's kind of where that cardboard box idea came from. Yeah.
And who made the puppets?
So the puppets were all made by Hannah Smith, who, if you remember, she co-wrote the story with Ralph, and then she directed the play. And these puppets now are, I think, only about 3 months old. These are brand new puppets for this run. We first used them in July in New Zealand, and they are slightly different to the original ones. So the original ones were much more low-tech, and these ones have sort of a wooden skeleton that allows us a bit more precision for us to emote with them and give them life. So the sort of skeleton was a collaboration between Hannah Smith and a puppet maker in Wellington called John Coddington, who is a fantastic guy. And then Hannah has designed the faces, and she's created those with the paper mache, and you know, she's really built the characters there for us. And, yeah.
The faces, now that you mention them, they have a wan kind of look, a neutral look.
Yeah.
Why was that? I think it's quite interesting, but why? What made that a choice?
Well, I guess there are two sort of distinct classes of puppet. I guess there's Maggie and her mother and father, who are relatively sort of realistic and worn in that they're, you know, they're relatively impoverished in, you know, I don't even know exactly when it would be, maybe the Depression era. It's vaguely in the past. So they're sort of this impoverished family. You know, their clothes are all patched and they're sort of scrabbling about to get by day to day. And then the other groups of puppets are the puppets that Maggie meets down the paper road. And so they're all much whiter. And again, that's the idea that even in the story of the play, that they're paper, that everything in that town is paper and everything on them. So, yeah, the puppets in the real... Maggie and her family have fabric for hair, whereas the puppets in the paper town have crepe paper for hair. So, I think the idea of sort of giving them a worn look was to kind of help reinforce the idea that they exist, that, you know, that they're not just props to tell the story, that when that story is being told with the puppets, it's really happening. Yeah.
Do you ever look out at the audience and see what their reactions are? Because you narrate a lot to
yes.
directly to the audience and sing to them. What do you see?
Gosh, what don't I see? We've had some great... because it's a family show as well, we get a lot of children in, and children are wonderful to have in an audience because they don't censor. They haven't necessarily trained themselves to hide their emotions. So, you know, you look up sometimes, there's some spooky bits, and sometimes you'll look up and you'll see some poor children crying in the front row and you feel a bit guilty about that. But, you know, I mean, it's a really enjoyable play to do because day to day it seems to change quite a lot. Some days the audience are really sort of vocally appreciative and laughing a lot at the jokes, and other days we get far fewer laughs at the jokes for whatever reason, a slightly smaller audience maybe, or who knows what the reason is, but you can look up then and you see people sort of really listening for the story and the narrative. And I mean, some of the, you know, like I say, kids don't censor. We had one kid a couple of weeks ago in Auckland, and Maggie, as an old lady, said, "I'm not as quick as I used to be." And quick as a flash, out of nowhere, this kid in the front row just went, "It's because you're old." We were like, "Oh, great, we're trying to go through this emotional scene, and these kids are just joining in." But it's wonderful. Like, you know, that's what I love about theatre anyway, the opportunity for that real... unadulterated interaction with people.
So you toured this in New Zealand. Do you find a difference between the audiences in New Zealand and other countries?
Yeah, a little bit. There's there's a few references in the play that are very New Zealand, New Zealand centric, and they obviously get a bigger reaction in New Zealand, where people are more likely to get them. But the great thing about New Zealanders is they are absolutely everywhere. So we've had a fair few of them up here in Edinburgh coming along and chuckling away at references to Dunedin or something. And but beyond that, I think the reaction has been relatively the same, because, I mean, it is quite a human story at the end of the day. You know, a son comes home, an estranged son returns to his mother and the small town he grew up in. And you know, that response to your mother aging and perhaps, you know, perhaps suffering a little from mental frailty at that age, and then the storytelling aspect as well. So it just feels like it's really, it doesn't feel nationally specific to me. I think the audiences tend to respond pretty similarly as a whole. There'll be little bits here and there that go differently, but overall it feels like a pretty similar response.
So have you always been part of this theatre company?
When they did this in 2012, that was the first show that they'd made. No, it wasn't. I'm lying. I'm a terrible person. They made a show in 2000 and earlier on called The Engine Room in New Zealand, and that was a political show. And then they made this one. And then I think I did my first production with them in 2013, maybe. And I've done three or four productions with them now. So we've worked together quite a bit. And Wellington in New Zealand is a very small city in the as a theatre city. There's not a huge amount of people doing it. So you know, I've worked with Ralph and Hannah in their company, and they've worked on shows that I've been in with other companies. So it's a very sort of shared group of people. But yeah.
And have you always worked in shows with puppets or other types?
This is actually the only show that I've ever done involving puppets. So that was a huge learning curve, and it was very exciting. We all really enjoy trying to figure out how the puppets behave, and yeah, I mean, it's something I'd love to do more of, because I really enjoy it. But I tended to do I've done a lot of sort of physical comedy and devised theatre as well. So, but again, because Wellington is such a small industry, you end up doing a very wide range of things, which is really a wonderful thing for an actor to get to express themselves in so many different styles.
Are you going back to New Zealand after this?
I'm not. I'm now based down in London. I've been over here for about a year. I was born here. And I moved to New Zealand when I was 12, and then just came back last year. Ralph and Hannah are taking their show, The Bookbinder, to a couple of places. And Elle is heading back to New Zealand before taking a different show over to the States. So it's, you know, it's a nomadic lifestyle, that of the artist. So we're all spread about, but, you know, it's been hugely exciting for us and to come back to the show. And I should quickly mention a massive thanks to Creative New Zealand, the government body in New Zealand who fund the arts. And they funded us to redo the show and redesign it, remount it, and then bring it over here. So that's been absolutely wonderful. Massive thank you to them. We've had an absolute blast doing it.
Well, thank you very much, Paul, for taking the time after your show to talk to us at Fringe Review. Break a leg and good luck with the rest of the run.
Yeah, thank you very much. We're looking forward to it. August 27th is the last one, so another couple of weeks and we'll be out. Thank you.